Good morning, everyone. It is Mindy and I always enjoy coming over. The sermon this morning comes from a series that I did over at Zane Trace Church of Christ called Red Letters, and it's just a focus on the words of Christ that we find in the New Testament, which in some Bible editions are in red letters. So this one is called When You Hear the Truth. The quotations I have will be from the NASB 95 version this morning. I want to go back to the last part of the verse that was read a moment ago, John 18:37b. In response to Pilate's question, Jesus says this, the red letters, "For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." John 18, if you want to turn to John 18, we're going to look at different snippets of scripture there. But John 18 documents the arrest, the degenerate so-called trials, and the wrongful sentencing of Jesus. Despite a complete lack of evidence of any wrongdoing or lawbreaking, and despite the lack of a valid charge, Jesus was judged guilty and condemned to death. At no point in the events of this chapter do the administrators of the justice systems of the time seek the truth of the situation. And what a sad, sad commentary on that day that happened, and on today and any time when the leaders and regular people alike show a total disregard for and lack of interest in the truth. If asked how we feel about the truth, I believe that most of us would say we're all about the truth. I don't know anybody that, if I ask them, you know, how do you feel about the truth? Do you believe in truth? Very few people are going to say, no, I like lies better than truth. But as humans, I suspect there are times, and I'll speak for myself, when we have responded less than admirably toward the truth. And if there is one thing that you and your family, your friends, this congregation, this country, this state, this country, and so on, could use more of today, it is a proper response to the truth. Stephen Lawhead is a fantasy writer. I've never read any of his books, but when I was looking for quotes about the truth, this quote popped up from him, and I was surprised to find that he was a writer of fantasy novels. But this is what he says: to see evil, that is, to see falsehood and lies, and call it good, to call falsehood and lies truth, mocks God. To see evil and call it good mocks God. Worse, it makes goodness or truth meaningless. A word without meaning is an abomination, for when the word passes beyond understanding, the very thing the word stands for passes out of the world and cannot be recalled. And that's a scary thought, to think that we can so abuse the truth, the words for the truth, that eventually we lose what truth is, that the ideas embodied by words of truth leave the world altogether. It's no wonder to me when I think about that quote, that Proverbs 4, verse 19 says, "The way of the wicked," that is, the way of falsehood and lies, "is like darkness. They do not know over what they stumble." And it also says in verse 18, "But the path of the righteous," that is, the path of truth, "is like the light of dawn that shines brighter and brighter until the full day." So all this brings us back to John chapter 18. John 18 documents four basic responses to hearing, learning, recognizing, or knowing the truth. We will briefly look at each of these responses, and we'll look at the passages in John chapter 4 and have a few comments on them. And as we do, I just want to invite you to honestly evaluate your responses to the truth and commit to always choosing truth regardless of the difficulty or the consequences. It's not always easy to choose truth, and we're going to see that in John 18. One thing that I use, just kind of one test, and maybe you do this, but one test for my response to the truth, let's say somebody says something to me and it upsets me a little bit. They call me out on something, as it were. What I like to do is just listen to the follow-up conversations I have in my head. I don't know if you do this, but Mindy may call me out on something, and then for the next 2 days, when I have time, I have these little conversations in my head about that conversation. And it's just always interesting to me to step back and listen to myself and observe what it is I'm saying in these conversations. And I all too often find myself trying to rationalize in these conversations. Well, I try to make up a reason for why this or that. And when I find myself doing that, oftentimes I'm trying to defend an untruthful or wrong position. And so that's just one little test that I like to use, is I just listen to the conversations I make up in my own mind. I try not to have them, because they're often not very productive past a certain point. But it is interesting to just observe. Usually when I do have them, I'm trying to prop up something I've done wrong rather than just admit the truth and accept that and go about making that right again. So with that introduction, I want to look at the four ways that John chapter 18 shows us that we can respond to the truth, or at least four ways we see in there. And those four ways are this. We can try to get distance from the truth. We can try to deflect it. We can even try to destroy it. And we can also try to draw near it. And obviously, the last one is the proper response to truth. So first, looking at John 18, verse 17, and then skipping down to verses 25 through 27, the first thing we can try to do is we can try to distance ourselves from the truth. Here's what it says in John 18, verse 17. Then the slave girl who kept the door said to Peter, "You are not also one of the man's disciples, are you?" Peter said, "I am not." Verse 25. Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself, so they said to him, "You are not also one of his disciples, are you?" Peter denied it and said, "I am not." One of the slaves of the high priest, being a relative of the one whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Peter then denied it again, and immediately a rooster crowed. So three times, we know Christ prophesied that this was going to happen, but three times Peter was given the opportunity to draw near to the truth, and what did he do? He distanced himself from it. And a lot of times this is maybe our first reaction, and maybe the base reaction is we just try to create separation. Well, that's not really what happened, or that's not the way it was, and we see Peter do this. So when confronted with those hard questions of life, or maybe you've done something that wasn't quite right and somebody calls you on it, how do you respond? Hopefully, we are prepared or preparing with truth from the Bible, or we acknowledge that the Bible is the place to look for truth. You know, you and I mentioned this in Bible class. As people who believe in God, we don't get the opportunity to make up truth. We don't have the authority, the power to make it up or to decide what is true and what is righteous. It's already been decided. It's already been written for us. When we see that word righteousness in the Bible, it's only up to us to look for what the Bible says that is. And so that's the way it is with truth. And just acknowledging the first thing ought to be, even if we're not sure what the Bible says, is just to acknowledge that the truth is in there. And it's up to us to find it. It's only the truth that will lead us out of the chaos of our personal lives, our homes, our society, our world. I don't know about you, but we have certain family members who, when you talk to them, they keep talking about just the chaos that's in their life. But when you listen to the things they say, you realize they're walking in that path described by Proverbs chapter 4, verse 19, away from the truth. It's only the truth that's going to lead us to the calm place that we need to be. So the first response is we can try to distance from the truth. The second is we can try to deflect the truth. And that takes us back to the reading from this morning. This is what Pilate tried to do. John 18, verse 37. Therefore, Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." And Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" I don't know if you've ever been in those conversations, but if a conversation's about the Bible, that's oftentimes a lot of what you'll hear is, "Well, we can't really understand the Bible because it's figurative." Or they'll go to a hard passage in the Bible, maybe from Daniel or Revelation, and say, "This just doesn't make sense. How do we believe this stuff?" And that's kind of what Pilate did. He deflected. He didn't want to deal with Jesus' answer, because Jesus said, "You say correctly that he was a king," and he mentions truth. So Pilate says, "What is truth?" Like, truth doesn't really exist. Pilate appears to be interested early in knowing the truth about Jesus, but when he asks about Jesus being the king right away, we see he has no real interest in this, no real interest in knowing what the truth is. Deflection is a very, very common response to the truth. It often comes in the form of phrases like, you're old-fashioned. Have you ever heard that one? Like you may get after somebody and they're just like, you're old-fashioned, you're out of touch, or this is the 21st century, something like that. Or a phrase like, this can't be wrong because God made me this way, or my truth can be different from yours. What I find interesting is that we can deflect and be noncommittal to the truth until we are wronged, until it gets a little closer to home. But then when we're wrong, we become acutely serious about and focused on the real, very real difference between right and wrong, truth and falsehood. Deflecting the truth, like distancing from it, will not heal or cure any of our mental, emotional, or spiritual illnesses. Deflecting the truth only deepens and hardens the symptoms of a life lived in darkness, in falsehood, and in lies. So the second thing we can do is deflect the truth. Third thing is, we can even try to destroy the truth. Look back at John chapter 18, verses 37 and 38 with me. I'm sorry, John, let's go to verse 3, and then we're going to drop down to verse 28. So John 18, verse 3, Judas then, having received the Roman cohort and officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees, came there with lanterns and torches and weapons. First, I just want to pause. Cohort, according to the Bible dictionary, is 420 soldiers. Now, I want you just to let that sink in a little bit. I don't know how many are here today, rough count, 50, 60, 70, somewhere like that. Well, think about 420, six times that number, seven times that number. That's what a Roman cohort is, and that's how many they took to go get Jesus from the garden. Now, if you remember, he went to the garden to pray with three apostles, so there were four of them coming out of the garden when Judas and 420 Roman soldiers and the chief priests and Pharisees met them. And again, notice that they were carrying lanterns. That is the people with Judas. They were carrying lanterns and torches and weapons. So then let's go to verse 28. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas into the praetorium, and it was early. And they themselves did not enter, that is the Jews, did not enter into the praetorium so that they would not be defiled, but might eat the Passover. Therefore Pilate went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? They answered and said to him, if this man were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you. So Pilate said to them, take him yourselves and judge him according to your law. The Jews said to him, we are not permitted to put anyone to death. Notice how violent these Jews were and how hypocritical, and how violent and hypocritical people can become when we decide to try to destroy the truth. In verse 3, again, they took 420 Roman soldiers with lanterns and torches and weapons, and they went out to arrest four people. Peter had a sword, we know that. The other two apostles might have. Jesus, no report of arms on him, weapons of any kind. So why did they go out like this to arrest one person? One person who only had three, even if you wanted to call them bodyguards, which they really weren't, three people with him. Why did they go out like this to arrest him? Was it because he had committed a grievous wrong? You know, I've heard of people being fired from a job for a grievous wrong that they commit. Did Jesus do that? Was it because he had assembled a large following and equipped them with an abundance of the latest in weapons technology? No, neither of those things were true. The simple truth is, they wanted him dead. That is the bare, simple truth of the fact. Jesus was the truth. He spoke to the truth, and they wanted to destroy the truth. They wanted him dead. Look again at verses 29 through 31, and I want you to pick up again on the lack of a valid accusation, and again the real reason why they give for bringing Jesus to Pilate. Therefore, Pilate went out and said to them, what accusation do you bring against this man? Look at what they say. If this man were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you. What did Jesus do? What was the charge? They give none. They simply said he did evil. What'd he do? They never give Pilate a reason for bringing Jesus to him. They simply say, take our word for it. He's a bad actor, and that's why we brought him to you. So first, they have no valid, solid accusation. One of the foundations of any fair and just legal system is that the accused gets to come and stand before the accuser and face the accusation. There was none. Verse 31, so Pilate said to them, take him yourselves and, look at the word Pilate uses, judge him. Pilate says, judge him according to your law. But that's not what the Jews wanted to do. What did they want? Verse 31, we are not permitted to put anyone to death. That's what they really wanted. They didn't want justice. They didn't want to see Christ held accountable because he was leading a rebellion or because he had done something really grievous or evil. They just simply wanted him dead because he spoke the truth. They were trying to destroy the truth. And before we leave this third point, I want to just notice the hypocrisy of these early religious leaders, these Jews. They were 100% committed to a legalized murder. That's what they wanted. They wanted to murder Christ, and they wanted Pilate to say, give them the stamp of approval so that it could be legal, so that they would face no repercussions from it. But did you also notice in verse 28, they didn't want to get close to Pilate because he was a Gentile and Passover was coming up? Look at verse 28 again. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas into the praetorium, and it was early, and they themselves did not enter into the praetorium so that they would not be defiled, but not might eat the Passover. So they were ready to commit outright murder, but at the same time, they had to go to church the next day. So they wanted to stay clean to do that in a religious sense. So the hypocrisy, when we just try to make up our mind to destroy the truth, not only the violence, but just the absolute hypocrisy of that becomes clear to everybody. So the fourth thing we can do, which is the ideal, obviously the ideal response when we're talking about the truth, is we can draw near to the truth. In John chapter 18, verse 15, it says there, Simon Peter was following Jesus, and so was another disciple, who was more than likely John himself. John has a tendency to write in the book of John about himself in the third person, so he very rarely references himself directly as he or I, but he'll mention third person. So more than likely, this was John the Apostle. Then going back to verse 15, now that disciple was known to the high priest and entered with Jesus into the court of the high priest. So Peter stayed on the outside and tried to distance through denial himself from Christ, the truth. But this other disciple, more than likely John, went right into the high priest with Jesus. And not only that, it says the high priest recognized him. John was in a real position of threat and danger here because he was siding with Christ. And yet he goes right in with Christ to stand near and be with Christ. Standing near and with the truth is not always a comfortable place to be. It probably was not comfortable on this night for this other disciple. Can you imagine being in a crowd that wants to put Jesus to death and you're the only one standing with him? Peter wouldn't come in. So you don't even have Peter as company. You just Christ who they're trying to kill and yourself. And it's absolutely against Christ. We're at a place in today's society when standing with the truth and standing for the truth will very, at a minimum, likely elicit verbal abuse at a minimum. And just depending on the situation, could result in physical abuse or even a miscarried justice. We see that where people are, treated differently depending on whether you're standing with or the truth or with falsehood. We see that today. And certainly we see verbal abuse. I mean, we are, we seem about as divided as a country can be right now. And it's almost like we can't talk civilized to each other about opposing viewpoints, at least what we see on the news. So standing with the truth today, as it was then, can be an uncomfortable place to be. But regardless of how others respond, there's no better place to stand than with the truth. And we have the assurance that if we draw near to God, that he'll see us through. James, he says there about God, but he gives a greater grace. Therefore, it says, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And I would say that God is opposed to lies, but gives grace to the truth. Verse 7, submit therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be miserable and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned into mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, and he will exalt you. So we can try to distance from the truth. We can try to deflect it. We can even try to destroy it, or we can draw near to it. So as we close, fortunately for all of us in the world, the one and only thing that lasts is the truth. You know, different lies will come and go. And we can go back in history and we can look at that, even the last several decades in this country. Different lies will come and go, but the truth is always there. And the truth always comes out, and that's why a new lie has to be made. A new lie has to continually be made to combat the truth. But the truth will last. It cannot and will not ever be destroyed because the truth is Christ. The truth is God. And the truth is the only soul shelter, the only life shelter that will endure. One of the study aids I use online is called Helps Word Study. And here's what it says about the Greek word that is rendered as truth. I'm not going to try to pronounce it. But here's what it says about that word. Properly, it means reality. So this word in John 18 that's rendered truth means reality. And I thought this was interesting. In ancient Greek culture, the Greek word for truth was synonymous for reality as the opposite of illusion. So just think about that as well. When we deal with truth, we deal with what is real. When we deal with lies and falsehood, we deal with what is illusion. And that was the meaning of the ancient Greek culture. So if we are not drawing near to the truth, we are drawing near and deeper into illusion. And then we might read John 18:37 as this: "For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world, to testify to the reality. Everyone who is of the reality hears my voice." In the end, it does not matter how chaotic and how corrupt the world around us is. It does not matter how much someone else lies or how hypocritical they may be. The only question you and I have to be concerned with and answer is, what am I doing about the truth? Am I distancing myself from it? Am I trying to deflect it? Am I trying to destroy it? Or am I trying to draw near to it? The truth, the reality. And am I standing with it, however difficult or easy it might be? C.S. Lewis said, and this is a rough paraphrase, he said, you know, the God's law, the Bible, doesn't really care how hard it is to stand with the truth. It just gives us the truth, and it tells us to stand with it. And God expects us to do that. So if you're struggling in your relationship with the truth, drawing near to the truth is the only thing that will resolve the struggle in the long run. John 8:31-32, Jesus said this: "If you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." It's the only thing that can free us from whatever it is we struggle with. So if you're ready to draw near to the truth this morning in baptism or repentance, you can do that as we sing this next song, or feel free to talk to me after service or one of the other members here. But whatever you decide to do, just decide to draw near to the truth today and keep drawing near throughout the rest of your day. So if we can help, please come while we stand and sing.